This is episode 29 of the Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
You wanted to leave your husband. Okay, so why didn't he go? Why didn't you? 140 million people disappeared 3 years ago. Did you wish them away too? Because that's a lot of birds to bury, Erica. That's a flock of epic proportions. I get it. I felt the same as you. I felt responsible for losing my children. I thought it was my fault. But I moved past it. I evolved. Because that's pathetic.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about Lens. Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn. And your friends are gone. And your friends won't come. So show me where you fit. Hello, everyone. I'm Mary Larson.
My name is Blake. And I realized I am definitely married to the honey badger.
Oh, my God. The more I watch this woman, I'm like, Nora, you are my spirit animal.
Or the honey badger is your spirit animal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not always a good thing. You know, comes back to bite you. That's
wow.
For sure.
Wow. The honey badger is out back in full today. Mm-hmm. I mean, this past episode. What a turn. What a turn for Nora Durst.
Yes.
I mean, stealing documents, throwing rocks through people's windows, calling people out about their beliefs like we just played in that clip. Wow. Unbelievable. Mm-mm. Unbelievable. And you know what? As a personal note, I just wanted to say one thing to you guys. I had a really shitty day today. I had a really shitty day at work. And I had a really shitty day with just, you know, things going on in life. And I want to let you know that the only thing besides my beautiful wife who's sitting across from me in this little makeshift, well, in the studio that we have in our basement, the only thing that was going to make me happy today was podcasting. And it was not because people listened to us or whatever, but because I get a chance to talk to you and I get a chance to, you guys make me feel good and your engagement. And knowing that I'm there with you to watch The Leftovers and knowing that my wife and I have an influence on a very personal experience with
you guys.
You're
getting all choked up for real.
No, seriously, I am. And knowing that we have an influence on a very personal aspect of your lives and that we're in your ear in a very personal way, it means a lot to me. So I just wanted to say thank you.
God, you're so nice.
I just wanted to say thank you. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. That aside, I know you guys just want to get to Lens, so I won't waste your time any longer. But thank you. So, my love, how many Damon ratings would you give this episode of The Leftovers?
I'd give this another solid 4. You know?
Really?
I really might have given it a few more. Mm-hmm. Meaning like one more.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
Oh, God, it did so much for me. It did so much.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it didn't leave me questioning anything.
What do you mean?
Well, because it answered all my questions.
Well, oh, no, there's certainly some questions.
There are some. But it answered so many mm-hmm. that I was like, awesome, awesome. I became greedy. That's what it was. I was like, all right, give me more. All right, so where did the girls go? Right, you're going to answer the bird? All right, you're going to answer that guy that lives in the trailer? All right, you're going to answer this or that? All right, where's everything else?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know who I felt like?
Who?
I felt like Dudley Dursley when he goes, 37? There were 37 presents last year.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Hey, that is the first "You're a wizard, Harry" we've had in a long time.
Oh, but that's what I felt like. I got greedy. and I kind of want more answers. I wanted to see some Patty. I wanted more Matt, who was looking very tan, but he was wearing clothes. I don't know how you got to put on clothes and got out of your stockade. I wanted even more. It was amazing and awesome and definitely five Damons worthy, but I'm greedy. So I'm holding out. I'm holding out. How about you?
I'm giving it 4.8 Damons.
Is it even possible? That's that mean he's just missing an ear? Listen,
this is my podcast. I can do whatever the hell I want.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about 3/4 of a face.
He's just a Van Gogh.
And an eyebrow.
Yeah, he's a Van Gogh.
No, I'm giving it 4.8 Damons. I think this was my favorite episode yet. And even more so than Orange Sticker, which was my favorite episode up until now. I really enjoyed Orange Sticker, all of the great things with Patty and everything, but this included a little bit of crazy from everybody.
Yeah, except Patty, and that's why I'm really excited about next week, because there's a lot of crazy Patty.
I know, and I'll tell you this too, it actually tied in Lori's story.
Yes.
To everything that's going on with Nora. And it tied in Matt's story to everything that's going on with Nora. It yep. tied in the Murphys to what's going on into Nora. And here's something for you too. Kevin admits that he's going crazy to Nora.
Love, love. All right. Well, let's not get into this. I'm happy about your Damon rating.
Well, what do we got from other listeners?
Jane Choi on Facebook gives it 3.5 Damons.
Oh, Jane, come on, girl.
Jane says, this episode really creeps me out, but also surprised me a bit because it brought some closure regarding Kevin telling Nora about Patty and Erica talking about the bird story. On the other hand, I feel that some characters are regressing back to their season one days. Hmm. Kevin is becoming crazy like his dad. Lori is relapsing. Calling in is that Tommy is okay and maybe thinking that he's with a GR. Matt is indeed starting up a new congregation. Nora is quasi resuming her old job with the surveys while masking her own pain with her family. I'm glad Erica called her out on it. Brilliant way for Erica to deliberately provoke Nora by suggesting that her family died rather than departed, thus killing any hope Nora might still have for her departed family. I hate that they're making enemies of each other. I still don't understand why Nora would throw rocks at John's house, though. Perhaps it's her subconscious way of relieving stress or anger for needing to take care of Mary because Matt was forced out by John.
Hey, well, you know what? I think we got some answers for you on that one. Keep listening, Jane. Thank
yes.
you so much. And actually, Jane helped contribute to this episode a little bit later on. So, you know what? Keep listening about that. Steph Wanamaker on Twitter says, this is the first episode that deserves 5 Damons. I was literally speechless. Didn't see Erica exploding like that. And by the way, did you like my little Parks and Rec reference there?
Literally.
Literally. Oh, Rob Lowe, you're the best. And Missy Schmidt-Ducott, who we love, we haven't heard from you in a while, she says, 4 Damons for this episode. I'm going to go ahead and say that I believe Erica is deaf because of something her father did or didn't do.
Ooh, and also on Instagram, we have a couple of people weigh in. Justin O'Cooper gave it 6 Damons.
Oh, jeez.
6 awesome scenes with Regina King and Carrie Cook.
Coon.
Oh, my God. He did a typo. Sorry, I'm just reading it straight. Coon. Yes, Carrie Coon. I know Carrie's last name. I just had a glass of wine.
And we all know it takes about 1 glass for you to get hammered now because you're a mom.
That's it. I'm done.
All right. Well, before we get into the figure out that title, we actually have some announcements to make. Well, I wanted to call out a bunch of listeners, as a matter of fact, and this is not going to be a listener feedback episode. That will be reserved for next week. But I did want to make mention of some things that came true that listeners actually called. First, Brian Davids, famous for the Brian Davids Thought of the Week, was right about Virgil being part of Erica's family, and perhaps he could be her father, which Brian actually also thought of as well, and that John, in fact, tried to kill Virgil. So, Brian, congratulations. Shakita was also right. She sent us a theory that the pie came
yes.
from Virgil. So, she did on Twitter a little happy dance. And Rafe Collins Jr. was right about Erica not being on board with John Murphy. In the last listener feedback episode, if you guys haven't got a chance to listen to it, he left a voicemail saying that I think it's about time that Erica is going to be not on board with John Murphy. And you know what? You were right, kid. You're totally right. So for all 3 of you, Brian, Shakita, and Rafe, I got one thing to play for you.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Whenever we get something right, that's what we play, just to let you know. And that is that. My love, are you ready to figure out that title?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, kid. This episode was titled Lens. Tell me, since you're the one who rocks at these titles.
Oh, this one was a little easy.
little easy. So what do you got?
Well, it's Lens because now Nora thinks that she is a lens, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Lens, of course, being this new theory that people are like super zoom in pointing on departure energy mm-hmm. of some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
So,
as told by the DSD operative or the DSD associate, whose name is George Brevity, by the way, which you know the Leftovers continues to kill it with the names for all these characters. So yeah, he suggested that she is a lens, and lenses are people that when people are around them, whoever they touch or whatever, perhaps they are the catalyst that makes them actually depart. And not only does it refer to Nora, but it's now also referring to Erica because
yep.
she too believes that she is a lens.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
All right, my love. Let's start it up.
Okay. So, of course, this was a Nora-centric episode. Mm-hmm. And Lord knows I love me some Nora. So, Nora, just Honey Badger ruled pretty well this episode. It starts off, of course, with that science guy coming on in with his science-y stuff. Don't scan my stuff. Don't scan it.
The Dr. Joaquin Cuarto, who reminds me of Lorenzo Lamas. I will say that. You ever seen Lorenzo Lamas back in like the late 80s, early 90s?
I don't even know who Lorenzo is.
You don't know who Lorenzo Lamas is?
In the 80s or 90s?
Was
he like on TV? Because all I was allowed to watch was Disney.
TV, he was on movies, he was like action
star. I was able to watch
star.
Disney.
And he was just...
My parents wouldn't even let me watch The Simpsons. They thought that Bart would corrupt my mind.
Oh,
so,
my
no,
God.
I do not know.
No wonder
know
why
he
you
is.
Don't know who Lorenzo Lamas is. Sorry, continue.
Okay. One of my favorite things, Nora kicked his stuff.
Just kicked his stuff.
I went, God, that must have really hurt.
Yeah, right?
Like he had like his whole suitcase and stuff, and she just kicked his stuff.
Well, especially because he wouldn't let the guy, one of the park rangers, put his stuff through like that little metal detector.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And he's like, oh, you're not putting my stuff through your fucking machine. And now Nora just kicks his stuff right off
Done.
The porch. And how creepy was it that he's got like this microwave
emitter thingy? Oh my God, it was a Ghostbusters
thingy, you know?
Something strange in the neighborhood.
Don't cross the streams!
Who are you going to call? Just blame it on Nora Durst. Then, of course, you find out that she broke the Murphy's window. Honey Badger don't care.
Honey Badger don't give a shit. That's
nope.
what Honey Badger does.
Why did she do that?
I'm going to turn that question right back on you because you're a woman and women's complicated feelings are very, very complicated. And I would like your interpretation of that.
I took it as, what the fuck? Why did your daughter depart? And you suck because now my brother's outside with his balls hanging down in the air. So I'm just mad. I'm going to break something.
Yep.
I'm going to break your window.
I'm going to break your window.
Yeah.
And I think you're probably right about that. I think it is in fact, it has to do with Matt, obviously. But I also think, too, that, like you said, part of it is due to Evie disappearing. What the hell? I moved to Miracle to get the fuck away from all of this. And now your daughter's disappearing. You're bringing all these people back into my life. I'm getting all these phone calls. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
It's a little frustration.
No, I hate it.
Yep.
Absolutely hate it.
I totally agree.
However, I did not hate Nora's hair in the beginning of this episode. I'm just going to note, because, you know, I like to talk about the people's hair. Looked very nice. Almost looked like she got a trim.
You see, I am going to disagree with you on this one. I liked Nora's hair back in season one far more than season two.
No, well, I'm not saying that I like it over. I'm just saying I think she got a trim or whoever did her hair. Later on the episode, it got a little messy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the Texas heat. Who knows? But I noticed and I thought, oh my God, it looked like she got another trim.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really didn't like that, you know, being Honey Badger like Nora, I feel like she's my spirit animal. I feel like I do a lot of the same things. Why does she keep saying, yes, this is Nora? Okay, so they call, hi, is this Nora Durst?
Yeah. It should be, this is she.
Oh, no, not even that. No. Why is she saying yes?
Here, I'm going straight to like the grammatical answers.
No. When you get an unknown phone call, or when someone knocks on your door and they say, hey, are you Nora Durst? You don't say yes. You say, who the hell are you?
Well, eventually she does say that.
No, but women, at least me, maybe it's because I'm crazy. People say, hi, is this Mary Larson? I go, who's this? Mm-hmm. Who am I speaking with? Mm-hmm. Who are you? Sorry, I don't give them sass.
Sorry, it's with whom am I speaking?
I'm not proper. I'm like, you have a freaking unlisted number and you want me to say yes?
This is a lady that created a neighborhood watch, by the way.
I'm going to our city meeting. I'm going to Periscope.
No, Mary created a neighborhood watch for where we live.
On Facebook.
On Facebook of all things.
But that's what I would do. So I was very upset with Nora because she should not be saying, yes, it's me. Mm-hmm. She finally eventually did. She finally eventually said, you know, who is this? Who's calling me? But I just got really pissed off. Mm-hmm. And I liked how everyone just has her freaking cell phone number. Even Lori.
Yeah, right? And she's
in Lori. It's easy to find on the internet.
Yeah, and it's easy to unlist yourself too, by the way. But
they threw that in because they had to somehow get these people to annoy Nora.
Sure, yeah.
And they knew people were going to say, how the hell did they get her phone number? Mm-hmm. So pretty much Lori right now is like Hurley from Lost.
Yeah.
By saying,
come on, I got
to
play it.
I'm waiting.
You have to go back, Kate.
Thank you.
You know, for those of you who watched Lost, God, I can't believe I'm doing it now.
Yes.
Hurley would basically be like, all right, audience, here's what you may not understand, or here's how I'm going to fudge over a plot point and just fill it in. It's like when the villain in a movie is like right before they're about to kill the good guy, and they're like, well, let me tell you about my whole plan. Anyway.
Like what we saw in Spectre just a couple of days ago. But by the way, bad movie. Not a good James Bond movie.
I'm so glad you said that because I didn't like it and I just didn't know if that's because I don't like James Bond.
Well, I can't say there was a bad movie, but it just certainly wasn't good. It was definitely not Skyfall.
Why did he bang like an 18-year-old? Very uncomfortable, didn't you, Craig? Anyway, so Lori's saying, oh yeah, you know, I could find your stuff online. It's easy to go unlisted. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I didn't know. I get that they're tying in Lori, and I also get in now, where the hell did Tom go?
Yeah, and why is she not calling Kevin, by the way? That's a good question. I know this is getting a little bit further into the season, but why is she calling Nora? I mean, technically, I suppose, Kevin is Tommy's dad. So what are we doing here? And here's the thing. Where did Tommy go? What did Lori do? And did you notice that Lori is actually smoking again?
Oh, my God.
BT Dubs?
She is a hot mess again.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, smoking, just all crazy. Crazy going on because her son's gone.
So that tells me that the whole thing to help the GR is out. It's gone because now she's ripping butts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Tommy's gone. She doesn't know where he is. So I think they're just, obviously they're planting seeds for future episodes.
But you're asking why didn't she call Kevin? She didn't call Kevin because the last time she called, she and Kevin saw each other, she almost had her daughter killed.
Ah, so she had to rely on Kevin to save her daughter. She doesn't want to rely on Kevin again to save her.
She's embarrassed.
To her.
She's embarrassed her because, exactly, I fucked up our daughter. She almost died. Mm-hmm. Do you think she's going to call her husband and be like, hey, you know how you just saved our last kid because mm-hmm. I fucked up? Well, I think I fucked up again.
Yep.
No. She's going to call Nora, another mother, mm-hmm. and she knows that, hey, out of mom code, you're going to respect me and let me know if my kid's okay.
Sure, especially after the encounter with the book publisher, by the way, when he reminded her of all the things that she had done inappropriately mm-hmm. with Jill. So I could see that reasoning. Okay, I gotcha.
I like that Kevin is still being cuffed to the bed. I like that for many reasons.
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
And for those of you who don't have a child yet, yes, the answer is yes. Babies are cock blocks. So Lily was crying like right at the moment as they started to get frisky. Damn.
Great analysis.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to know that they're still doing it and they're not letting that portion of the story go, by the way, the writers at least. They're still sticking with that and they're letting you know that it's still a very real thing for Kevin and Nora.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot.
Me too. Okay, another thing I need to point out about Nora. She answers questions and speaks to people as if the girls did disappear, as mm-hmm. if they did depart.
Okay.
But she just said a little while ago that she doesn't believe that they departed.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I like wrote down that she said that they do disappear. I forget who she was talking with.
Okay.
But she was talking with somebody and she basically was agreeing and saying that they departed. Mm-hmm. And she had that conversation with Jill where she said these girls didn't to depart. So I'm wondering if Nora has changed her tune.
No, I don't think she's changed the tune. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why she stole the DSD document is to prove that they didn't depart. And more importantly, that she didn't play a role in them departing.
Well, that's why she really wanted it.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure it wasn't her fault. And
she put up the whole... the idea that she was going there to help out
Erica,
but it's all a farce, you know? I mean, like, okay, and this is where I'm going to bring up Jane Choi, because she actually sent us a couple of articles, and one of them was with Carrie Coon, and she was interviewed by by Katie M. Lucas on Watching the Leftovers blog. And one of the questions to Carrie Coon was, why does Nora feel compelled to steal the DSD questionnaire?
Oof, because she's a honey badger.
Yeah, and Carrie Coon, I said Nora. Carrie Coon says, we have to remember where Nora comes from. She must have an answer. That is something she cannot control. It's the same for someone whose family member was in a plane that disappeared or in a shooting, where 5 minutes on this end or that end of their day would have changed the whole trajectory of their path, and they wouldn't have been killed. You obsess over these details. If you have an opportunity to have some answer to this trauma, you have to have it. That's why she, at least from Carrie Coon, that is why she took the DSD questionnaire.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, she follows it up when a question is asked. Nora tells Erica she brought the questionnaire to quell her fears. Do you buy any of that?
Oh, no.
No, certainly not, right?
She brought the questionnaire over to Erica because she wants to know Erica's answers.
Sure.
It's all selfish.
And Carrie's answer was, that's complete bullshit, by the way. Nora wants to prove that these girls didn't depart and that she, Nora, is the expert. Furthermore, Nora doesn't want Erica to get to claim that grief for herself. There's something very selfish about it all that I think. And we have to remember that Nora was from Mapleton. She was the woman who lost her family. Yes, she escaped from all that. But in this episode, she starts rubbing up against that identity again. And it's very uncomfortable. It's like putting on a wet bathing suit. It's not who she is anymore, but she can't escape it.
Oof.
Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's reminiscent of the coffee cup.
Oh, yeah. I love that part.
I love that part, too, where she just nudges it off just to see what people will do. And now she's thrust back into this whole idea, again, of departure. And it almost reminds me of Guest as well. Remember that when she goes to the conference, the drop conference, back in season one, and she gets a chance to live in somebody else's life for a little bit. She gets to become the guest in her own life. But in the end, she couldn't get past her grief, so that's why she ended up, spoiler alert, by the way, going to meet Holy Wayne and getting the magic fucking hug. And even though it didn't work, necessarily, she still couldn't get out of her own way. She couldn't let go of who she was. And it makes you wonder if she did it to needle Erica. She did it so that she could let her know that you're not the only one with grief. You're not the only one with kids that departed. And this is who I am too, and you need to know that. And by the way, it happened to me first. So get over yourself.
Mic drop.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, right?
Oh yeah, I agree. But you know who really took the cake this episode? I mean, I love Nora.
Mm-hmm.
But Erica, man.
Ooh, man, that final scene.
No, I'm just saying in general.
Okay. In what way? Well, I mean,
okay. Let's start at the very beginning. Let's talk about birds.
Lead me down the path.
Let's talk about those birds.
Okay.
Right? She goes on her like little frolic in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The bird is dead. Mm-hmm. She tosses it out. You see there's tons of other birds. What the hell are you doing, voodoo magic? And why did that bird live? And then she goes on and tells this story.
Mm-hmm. About the grandmother?
Yes. About how her grandmother called that Jarden would be special.
Mm-hmm. The Jarden of Eden, baby.
She makes a wish that her kids will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
when she leaves.
That Evie would be okay. She knew that Michael would be okay because of his faith, but she didn't know quite that much about Evie.
If she'll be okay.
Yep.
When she leaves John, and the next day Evie disappears. Mm-hmm. And that was the one and only time the bird was alive.
Correct. But it makes you wonder, since the grandmother tells these stories, right?
Yep.
If she had done it, or is it just, something that's passed down orally through time, and it's an urban legend. It's like Bloody Mary, say it three times in front of the mirror and she'll come out and kill you. Is it kind of like that? Is it just an urban legend, or did she really do it? And if she really did do it, what was her wish? But more importantly, Erica has now done it. The bird is now alive. Well, the bird at the time was alive, flew away after 3 days. And then now she's doing it again, and there's nothing happening. It lets you, or it brings you down the path. It gets you down the rabbit hole of asking, did what happened to Evie, did what happened to the water, actually lend more credence to the idea that the magic in quotations, of miracle is now gone?
Ooh, gone, or did it just get awakened?
In what way would it be awakened? What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, aside from no one disappearing, what other magical things have been happening? I don't know.
We have talked about psychic energy a lot in previous episodes. We have the stuff with Virgil going on. We had the stuff with the guy who...
Because that's why I'm saying it's still there. Like you said, is it gone? But if the psychics are still there, I mean, maybe it was just the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this just a big case of Home Alone? I wish my family would disappear.
Yeah, and that was a theory that we had last season. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I still think it holds a little bit of water. A little bit, because even for...
I'm saying it in a different way, though.
Okay, what do you mean?
Okay, so last season we said that the people who departed were unwanted in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Right?
Yep,
Kevin having sex with this woman that he didn't know. Yep. God, I wish I wasn't having sex with this woman. I don't know. Disappear.
Yep.
All these different people, they were somewhat... being a burden, possibly.
Yeah, Nora with their kids. Remember, like, yes. Right before they departed, the orange juice falls all over the cell phone.
The mom with the laundry had the screaming baby in the back.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, though, more, say Evie hasn't disappeared. Say sure. Evie hasn't departed.
Okay.
You know how Kevin really thinks he did? He made his family disappear. Really, his family was just in a plane without him. So
what do you mean?
In Home Alone, sorry, Kevin McAllister, not Kevin Garvey. Sorry.
We need a sound.
Fandoms.
We need a sound for Maryism, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he woke up,
next episode.
Kevin McAllister in Home Alone, woke up thinking he did make his family disappear.
Okay.
And that's now what's happened to Erica.
Mm-hmm.
One could argue that it did happen. It's like, you know those genies, like you make a wish and the genie does make the wish happen, but it happens in a different way.
Sure.
It's not how you expect. So yeah, maybe it really did happen. Maybe this magical bird wish did come true.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she didn't depart. Maybe she still disappeared, but did that mean that the magic still wasn't true?
Mm-hmm.
The genie just granted it in a different way.
Well, and I know we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast.
Aliens? Are we talking about aliens again?
We're not talking about aliens.
Damn it.
Aliens are out of the picture.
Damn it.
We've talked about ascribing meaning, and that this has come up multiple times, but I can't help but go back to it. When even Carrie Coon herself talks about, 5 minutes on this end or 5 minutes on that end of a day would have changed the whole trajectory of their day, of their path, and of a person's path. And they wouldn't, something bad wouldn't have happened to somebody if they changed one thing. And people obsess over those details and they ascribe meaning to it. What if I did this? What if I did that? I can't help but think that we as viewers are ascribing a specific meaning to these birds, even though it may not really be whatever we think that it is. I will tell you, though, that something special must be going on, because a bird to survive in a box that small, underground, It just doesn't happen. For three days. You could probably get a day out of it. Kind of like Erica said, you can get a day.
I don't know. Miracles happen. What was that movie with James Franco when he cut off his arm?
127 hours.
Hey.
You like that knowledge? I just spouted
Miracles
that.
Miracles happen.
I spouted that right off the top of my head.
I agree. And that's why, of course, Erica had to say that the bird was like pretty much on death's door. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Erica continues on her healing ways as Dr. Erica, who then sews up the Mr. Dr. Goodheart.
Oh, yeah. The guy from the beginning of the season.
Yeah. The little Australian doctor who's now been selling the reservoir water.
$500
Yeah.
A milliliter.
That's amazing.
A milliliter.
That is much more than I would have ever thought I would have gone for.
It makes you wonder, was he selling the water prior to, or because the water disappeared, he finally saw a niche market and said, hey, guess what I got?
Both.
I got tons of water.
Both.
And I wonder if it comes with like a certificate of authenticity. Like, this is Jordan water.
With him with a selfie.
Yeah.
Selfie of him like taking
at the
spring,
water. In front of the sign that can't take the water out.
And of course, I thought this was going down a different direction. I don't know, but needless to say, Erica asks him, and of course it was John that was one of the big people that beat him up, and he also took a palm print. So now John not only is trying to beat people up because they're saying that there's something special with Miracle,
right?
But he's also on the hunt for a palm print.
Now he's testing it. And I'm telling you, it's going to come back to bite Kevin.
Oh,
it
has to.
And more importantly, this is going to cause a big split in the families, right? Because Kevin is going to say, I'm sorry, John is going to end up saying, Kevin is the one who made Evie disappear. Look at the palm print. I got it. It's Kevin's palm. But now, I think Erica is going to blame Nora. And I think there's going to be a major, major, major shift in the family dynamic for both families. They're both going to be at odds. And this little palm print, the fact that John is trying to find the physical touch of things, he's trying to find the physical evidence, lends you to believe that there is a distinct dichotomy here between not only Kevin and Nora, but also John and Erica. You see that Erica is falling down this path of her faith, right? Falling down the path of like, I believe in these things. And she's so quick to turn her around back on Nora. Remember when at the end of the episode she says, did they die or did they depart? And what was the last words that your kids remember to the best of your recollection? She's taking Nora's facts in quotations and flipping them back on her. She's going to do the same exact thing to John. She's going to take the facts of the handprint and say, can't be Kevin. Wasn't him. It was something else.
Man.
That's my prediction.
I hope so, because Kevin is losing his mind.
Oh,
left the baby on the truck. I'm glad he left it on the truck and not in the truck because...
Oh, that would have been really ugly.
That would have been illegal.
But you know what? It's Texas. It's still freaking hot.
Of course. Of course. Glad Erica brought him in.
Right.
Brought Lily in.
That poor little girl. I mean, you wonder how long they were shooting that scene and how long the baby was out there. And
oh,
everything.
They didn't keep her out there that long.
I would hope not. I would hope not. But for the fact that Kevin is leaving this baby out there, it's making him go crazy. You can see it already, right?
Well, he eventually gets to tell Nora all the crazy stuff that he's doing.
And what do you feel about that?
So happy.
I'm so happy too.
The only thing I wished, so this is part of the reason why I didn't give it a 5.
Okay.
I'm sitting there. And I thought, oh man, you know what? I like, okay, we're supposed to be from Nora's point of view, so we get it. We just hear Kevin.
Sure.
But I would have loved to have Patty sitting right next to him and saying, you made a big mistake, Kevin, and then have him say that I made a really big mistake. Like I wanted the camera to pan.
Yeah, slightly.
And show her blurred, but he just, you know, because Justin did an amazing job in that scene, you know, basically saying, I'm either crazy or possessed. I don't even know what the F is going on.
I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, yeah. But I wanted to see a little bit of Patty, but maybe that's why I wasn't supposed to.
It was desperate. It was so desperate of him to say that. And here's the issue with showing Patty. Because if they do show Patty, that means... it's inferring that Nora can then see her.
No, but I wouldn't want Nora to see her.
That's what I'm saying. If they do show Patty, it infers that Nora can see her.
Okay.
Right? I mean, they could have played it off like she didn't, and I suppose visually you could have achieved that. But I think narratively and theoretically, it would have been a little bit of a a paradox, because can Nora see her? Can she not? And I think it would have been too confusing. So for the fact that Kevin, it was the relay between between Patty,
yeah,
and between Nora, was great. It really harkened back to his father from season one, when, you know, when Kevin Sr. is saying, "Yes, I know. Just shut the fuck up. All right, I'll tell him."
Mm-hmm.
You weren't quite sure if he was seeing things or if he was nuts or if he was real. And Nora has to go through the same thing. Yes, we know as viewers that Kevin is seeing Patty, but Nora doesn't yet. So she has to be in the dark the way that we were when Kevin was in the dark with his dad. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. Are you happy that he told her?
Yes, I'm ecstatic. I'm ecstatic because they finally... They can be on the level with each other now in a lot of different ways. And actually, and Carrie Coon mentioned this in that interview that I referenced. So I'm going to read part of it here. The question was, what's Nora's take on Kevin's admission? Is this news more shattering than Kevin's confession about his involvement in Patty's death? Carrie Coon said, yes. There's something concrete about the suicide and tangible about what happened with Patty in the past. There was a body, an event, and an accomplice. And they wanted to reiterate this. This is me now talking. They wanted to reiterate this in season two to get Patty when they showed Kevin dig her body up. They wanted you to know, guys, she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted you to know. Okay, now going back to Carrie Coon. But this thing now is so amorphous. Kevin could be descending into some kind of madness like his father. There could also be something in the universe that we don't quite understand, which is distressing, especially for someone who is as practical and as grounded in reality as Nora is. But I think the most disturbing part is that in violation of their agreement, Kevin did not share with her what's going on with him. That's the whole premise of their relationship. This idea of being honest with each other and putting all their cards on the table. Without that agreement being honored, she doesn't know really where they are in their relationship. And that is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This whole idea from the very beginning of when we met the Garveys and the Dursts in episode two, the instant their relationship calcified, it was real. It was because I shot Patty. Oh, no, I was there with Patty when she killed herself. Your brother helped me bury her, and I smoke. And, oh, yeah, by the way, I hire hookers to shoot me.
Yeah.
That was the foundation of their relationship. And it's perfectly reasonable for her to be upset with Kevin. Now, let's say, for the sake of argument, if we were in the same situation, right, mm-hmm. and I were to tell you, hey, BT Dubs, I see this person, and... I feel like I'm going nuts. Would you be upset with me, or would you empathize?
I'd empathize.
You would empathize?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's just the way that you got to handle it.
Hey, because you're telling me the truth now. Better you tell me I always say, better for you to tell me than for me to find out somewhere else.
Sure, yeah. So are you in agreement that this is the right thing for Nora and Kevin? That
yes.
Despite whatever... Nora
Despite
may be
whatever
upset
Patty
about.
Said,
yeah, sure,
yeah,
that it wasn't a big mistake.
Correct.
That it's the right thing.
Correct.
I would agree. I think that's the right choice for them.
Gosh, you know, I forgot to mention something about Nora.
What's that?
In addition to all of her phone calls, the one that she finally says, "Who is this?"
Mm-hmm.
rather than saying, "Yes, this is Nora." That person then tells her,
"I know where you're going."
That a demon resides in her. What?
Oh,
the
all right.
Fuck?
All right. Are we gonna? All right. Because I've been debating about this.
Debating about what?
In prep for the show, did I really want to tackle this whole notion? Because the show itself, in my opinion, told you that it was ridiculous.
That the demon theory is ridiculous?
Yeah, because Nora herself was laughing and almost crying at the same time. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that I finally took this lady serious and she tells me I'm a fucking demon. So, okay. So is this something that we need to address, or is this something that, like, do I need to go get Wikipedia on this? Because from my days back in Catholic school,
yeah, we already talked about Catholic school. Yeah.
With my palatial estates and no bed lifters. that joke keeps coming back up. Asriel, in fact, probably was not a demon, but more like...
An archangel?
An archangel.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But still, that means he's team bad. Dark side of the force.
Dark side of the force. Okay.
Yeah. See, I know some shit. Just because I didn't go to Catholic school.
And you didn't have palatial estates and butlers who serve you?
No, I actually ate ramen.
I had turkey dinner every night.
Yeah.
They brought me papers made of gold.
Calm down.
Gold leaf.
Calm down. Anyway, do we need to talk about this demon thing? Well, I think it's pretty cool.
I think it is cool. I mean, if you want to talk about it, I'd be more than happy to.
I like that they got the Vatican involved.
That they are calling on behalf of the Vatican. And BT Dubs, that's the second time I've said that. Crap.
Yeah, you're 10.
I know. I've read that the voice of the doctor who was calling Nora,
wow, this is something that you read about?
The character's name is Allison Herbert.
Okay.
But the voice of the doctor was Sonia Walger. Now, do you know who that is?
Was she on in the 80s or 90s? Because if so, unless she was in a Disney film,
Nope, she was in a very important show to our lives. You want to know what it was?
Tell me.
We have to go back, Kate.
Stop.
She played Penny.
I love Penny.
That's what I was told. That's what I've read. I haven't checked, so please forgive me if I'm wrong, but that's what I've read.
Wow.
I didn't have time to double check it.
No.
But so it makes you wonder if we're going to be seeing more of Dr. Allison Herbert. If that is, that
oh my
is
God.
In fact
if she
the
comes
case.
And like sprays her with holy water, I might need to change channel. I hate those kind of shows. I hate demon possession
the
shows.
The power of Christ compels you.
Stop it.
Not Penny's boat.
Yeah. So we also, I forgot to talk about Erica loading up on some serious cash. Now, of course, we didn't know what that cash was for until the end when we found out that she was going to be leaving, and that's why she took out all that money.
Did this surprise you?
That she had all that cash?
No, that she was leaving John.
No.
No?
No.
Because last episode you were saying that she is a loyal wife.
Yeah. But when I saw the cash, I changed my mind.
I would agree with that. And it was totally hidden, and you were like, okay, what is this?
Yeah.
This is the getaway money. This was the getaway bag.
And then the other thing that threw me was when she had the rock and she was saying, what do you think this is about? You know what this is about.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, wait a second. Mm-hmm. You are not cool. Okay. You're not cool. And she just became less and less cool with him throughout the entire episode.
I would agree. And obviously she's referring to the fact that John is burning people's houses down and beating up Mr. Goodhart.
And that Evie's disappeared. I mean, what do you exactly, like, something happened, you're not acknowledging it, something was special about Miracle, and now our daughter's disappeared. We're no longer in this special town.
Right, correct.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, what about the pie?
Oh, my God, I want to eat pie so badly. I'm so hungry.
Hey, listen, you have a choice between burritos and pie. Which one do you want?
Pie right now. Pie. Pie right now.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so we find out the pie is from Virgil.
Correct.
Who lives in the trailer park. The trailer, not even park, just his house is a trailer that's parked with Christmas lights.
Christmas lights guy. And we find out that Virgil is, in fact, related to Erica. And Erica has banished him in a certain way. And we also find out that Virgil was once shot by John Murphy.
So can we assume that Virgil is the guy that he attempted to murder and was sent to jail over?
Definitely.
I would agree.
Definitely. I can totally agree with that.
So I'm excited we know who he almost killed.
I'm excited about that too. This episode, you see, this episode gave a lot of answers, and they were kind of inconsequential answers. They were periphery answers in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, you found out about the wedding dress. You found out that the girl was wearing the wedding dress on the day of departure. And she continues to wear it each day, and she takes pictures with all the tourists that come by. And her house is part of the Miracle audio tour, which we discovered by Lorenzo Lamas driving the golf cart throughout the town. And then we find out about the goat, that Jerry the goat killer was released from prison and he is killing goats because he killed a goat on the day of the departure.
That's a lot of goats.
That's a lot of freaking... Dude, again, where are these goats coming from? What kind of goat farm you got going on here?
A very good one, I guess.
And we find out the answer about the birds. The birds are the wish that was told to Erica by her grandmother.
Found out about the pie.
Found out about the pie, where it was coming from, why it was being there. And how? First of all, how about that sequence of Erica running through to try to catch this kid?
Without her head...
Oh, what a great... her hearing aids. What a great bit of sound editing. Everything was muted and muffled, just the way that Erica would be experiencing it, you know? And I thought that was excellent. Excellent filmmaking. And I was totally afraid for her that she was going to get hit by a car. And I guess that would have been, a little cliche had they done it. So they played with you a little bit. I'm so glad that she did not get hit by a car.
I mean, she kind of almost did, but yeah.
She didn't get smoked by it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they played with you a little bit.
No, and they needed that to show, like, this girl's going to get you. Even a car won't stop her.
I could not run away from her. She's like the Terminator.
I'm glad that they've had her running in so many episodes, so we know. Once they started running, I was like, oh boy, you're screwed.
Kid, you're going to get caught.
Erica runs every day for fun. I hate runners. Ugh. Run for fun. God bless you. I don't really hate you. I just don't understand you. So then we had the whole Erica-Nora conversation. I mean, we had the fundraiser.
The fundraiser. Okay, so now this to me is where Regina King... I mean, it's hard to decide between the two. Is the standout moment for Regina King the fundraiser?
I just think this entire episode.
Or was it the confrontation with Nora at the end? Which do you think is like where she made her bones? Like she finally became...
They're too close. I just blended them all into one. Okay. I just left this episode going, I will not mess with Erica.
Right. I mean, poor Jerry. Poor Jerry goes in there and decides, hey, I'm going to go kill a goat right now.
Jerry's weird, man.
And he decides, I'm going to do that. And Erica can have no part of it. Mm-hmm. She ain't doing nothing. Like, no chance, bro. Don't come in here playing all that stuff. And then she asks the very important question. If there aren't miracles in Miracle, why does this guy, Jerry, the goat killer, why does he get a pass? Right? I wonder... I don't wonder. I would say, do you think that she's right? What makes him so important enough that he gets a pass?
Oh, I totally think she's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because in her opinion now, she says out loud, my daughter departed.
Correct.
And in my opinion, Jerry, if your freaking goats worked, none of this would have happened.
Yep.
Stop slaying your goats. It doesn't work, Jerry.
We're not special. We're not spared.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. That's how I want to be for like holidays. We have a very interesting family dynamic, and Blake makes me play nice.
Yes, I would confirm that.
And I just want to pull an Erica. I just want to let it all hang out.
Or you want to do a Nora and just throw some rocks through windows.
That's it, man. That's it. So I saw us and I was like, you must be a tourist too.
And yeah. She's running around there, throwing her arms up in the air. Dude, we're not spared.
Oh, I loved it.
And she's calling out the other moms of the girls that departed too, saying that they smelled like booze. And she's getting pressure put on her by these other moms to say, hey, just answer the questions.
We can't tell you. We signed a
an NDA, non-disclosure agreement.
Yeah.
They signed this, but they're saying, would you just do it so that they can confirm or not confirm? And Erica just won't do it.
I kind of was pissed for those other moms.
Why?
Because it's like, why wouldn't you do everything within your power to figure out something about the disappearance? Why are you not answering this guy's questions?
Yeah, yes, I agree with that. But there's also a part of me that thinks... they want her to answer the questions for the DSD to prove that they did not depart.
And they want her to answer the questions
Let me finish. Okay. Let me finish my thought. They want her to answer the questions so that they can prove that they did not depart because they want to keep up the farce that they're still there. mm-hmm. that they're still alive.
The hope.
And perhaps even the farce of miracle itself.
Excuse me.
The farce of miracle itself. Because everyone's still benefiting from this. Everybody. The real estate markets are through the roof, right? $3 million for a piece of shit house. Everybody, people are coming in. They're spending all the money in the town. They're buying miracle shirts at the convenience store, which you can buy at the Mary and Blake store, by the way. Miracle. Shameless plug. But everybody's benefiting. And if someone departs from this town, now it's no longer special. Mm. Now they don't matter. They're just like everybody else. And part of me thinks that's why they want Erica to answer these questions.
Yeah, maybe. I was just thinking that maybe they'd want to do it because maybe there would be something that she would say that would, I don't know.
I mean, but you do have the motherly side of all this saying, yeah.
That's just what I'm getting at, the motherly.
Do whatever you can to just answer the question so you can rule out whatever we need to rule out. I get that. I mean, I understand that. But, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me, the truther part of me, suggests that it's the opposite. I don't know.
Then we have the showdown. Nora versus Erica.
Mm.
Amazing, amazing camera work here. Mm.
This was very reminiscent for me of Silence of the Lambs.
Ew.
Very, very reminiscent. When they cut close, they box in right on their faces. The same thing that Jonathan Demme did for Anthony Hopkins and what's her name there? Oh my God, it's gonna kill me. Clarice Starling. What's her? Jodie Foster. Thank you. Jonathan Demme did the same exact thing during the big scene, like when he's in prison and she's there and she's talking with him a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had this really cool like sound in Silence of the Lambs. And you found the same exact thing in this episode. I wonder if it was like a callback to that in a certain way.
Ooh.
But it was so great because you can see the little flickering in Erica's lip as she's acting it.
Uh-huh.
And I just adored it. And Erica asked a question of Nora that to me felt very Hannibal Lectery, which was, did they die or did they depart? And it's asking Nora to go in her very fiber and really challenge herself the way that Hannibal makes Clarice Starling challenge herself. And when he starts saying, did the lamb stop screaming? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was totally in love with this whole, with the whole interaction. And the symbolism of cutting up straight on their faces the way that they did, the way that they framed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was indicative, in my opinion, of a mirror of the two of them. Everything else around them had been cut out. Everything that they'd seen about each other was now irrelevant. It was just them mirroring each other because they were the same.
Stop.
I mean, they're the same in a way that they are losing family members. But the game that they're playing, when Nora says, that's pathetic. I've evolved from what you're thinking. You didn't wish these people away. Otherwise, like the thing that we played at the beginning of the episode, otherwise there'd be a lot more people missing. And it's pathetic that you think that. And at that very moment, I think Erica realizes Nora's here for her, not for me,
mm-hmm.
not to help. She's trying to prove that she's right. You know, and this is one of the questions, too, that Carrie Coon was asked. She was asked, Nora's claim that she evolved from questioning her family's departure. She said this, and is she trying to convince herself that she has evolved? And Carrie says, she protests too much, it seems. Grief is a long and personal process. Nora's only 3.5 years out from this event that changed her life. So now we can say that the departure and miracle now are at least between 3.5 and 4 years apart from each other.
Yes.
So now we know the timeline. I don't think she could possibly know understand or evolve out of that grief. I don't doubt that she's been doing some of that work she had to in order to even be in the world. That evolution is important to her, but she's not there quite yet. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if... what was that?
I don't know.
I wonder if that is indicative of what Erica was then feeling at that very moment too, where she had that switch. She had that turn, like, this is fucked up.
Yes, of course.
And why she ended up throwing the rock through Nora's house too.
Because they are a mirror. They are two mothers who have now gone through traumatic, unexplainable loss. Mm-hmm. They're mad. And they're mad because each other is feeling that.
Yeah, sure. And oh, you know what? To get even deeper in this too?
Yeah.
A mirror was the reverse image of you. Right?
Ooh, yeah.
A mirror is the reverse image of you. If you put up an American flag or you put up a piece of paper with words on it, you see everything backwards. And to me, everything is now backwards between the two. Okay, first off, you have the very literal thing of Nora being white and Erica being black. That's just it is what it is.
You have married, unmarried.
Married and unmarried.
Not native.
Correct. And then you have a believer of faith and you have a non-believer of faith. And you have Nora losing her kids first, Erica losing her kids second. You have all of these things playing with each other, and it's all encapsulated by this one tight shot of the two of them going at each other. And what I hate this phrase, but I can't think of a better phrase. What a tour de force for the two of them. And I know everybody freaks out when they say, oh, they deserve an Emmy, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to go that far, because Carrie Coon should have got an Emmy for her portrayal in The Prodigal Son Returns. However, this is a pretty good case. This is a pretty good case for both, especially after... after Regina King comes off of her Emmy win for American Crime Story. So, I don't know. I'm just saying it could be possible. It's possible. But what an amazing scene. And the whole episode was very good. I enjoyed it. I would have given it about a 4-Damon episode until this exchange between the two.
Yes.
This exchange between the two just totally took it over the top for me. That was it. That was the end. I was done. It was a 4.8 episode. And then it finally brought everything together. It closed some gaps in the episode, in the story so far, and then it opened up new ones. It took everything that we've seen so far, put it together, and said, guess what? We're taking the narrative that we've started, and now we're moving forward. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And remember when I complained last episode, and I was like, hey, we're in episode 5 here, and what have we really done? Now I feel like a total jackass. I feel like a total jackass. And I know we have a tenement here, or we have a rule here. Well, at least I feel like I have a rule. There are no golden gooses. There are no golden cows. Right? You can't just believe in somebody because they are who you worship. But, you know... Son of a bitch. I think we're going to have to break that commandment because Damon Lindelof knows what he's doing.
He does.
He does. That's it.
We trust Damon.
So what did you make about Erica throwing the rock at Nora?
Fuck you.
Really?
Yep. They were right there too. It wasn't even late at night. The light was on.
Mm-hmm.
She could see Nora and Kevin. She mm-hmm. did see them. She made eye contact with them.
Right.
I almost took it, too, to say, I know you threw the rock in my window.
Yeah.
I knew it was you.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's your rock back.
How do you like me now? And actually, Jane Choi ended up sending us an interview with Regina King. It was on Variety. And she was asked this question. Hey, what does it mean that she threw the rock through the Nora's window at the end and just stayed there and looked at Nora and was like, dude, F you. And Regina King's answer was, she knew 100% without a doubt that Nora threw the rock through her window, and that 8-page scene is when she realizes Nora was the one who threw the rock. She really had no clue before then, but then it was like a fuck you moment, fuck you back moment.
Oh my God, took the words right out of my mouth.
And Mary had not read that, by the way.
No.
That was not in her notes. So imagine that. Imagine that. My
because I'm a girl.
Wife.
I got it.
You, that's why I always defer to you when it comes to stuff like this in women, because I'm not smart enough, and I don't have the emotional hormones that you do.
Yeah, we're a whole different breed.
Oh my God. And that kind of guilt and that kind of anger, I think for women is far more complex than for guys. Because for guys, you can go punch it out and you'll figure it out. But for women, it's so much more multi-layered that I think it lends itself to great, compelling scenes and work for television. I think that.
That's one way to say it.
Is that it, my love?
Yes, it is.
All right. I think it's time for the Brian David's Thought of the Week.
Mary and Blake, it's Brian Davids from the Film Schlubs podcast. People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. That's the English proverb, which means that you should not criticize other people if you have similar weaknesses or bad qualities yourself. In this episode, Erica proved that Nora lives in a glass house, as Nora shouldn't have thrown stones at Erica's wish theory or her home's window if Nora has the same fears regarding her own departed children, including the belief that she might be responsible for their departure. When Erica expressed her own fear that her bird-fueled wish may have caused Evie's disappearance, Nora said that her logic was a stretch, that her thinking was pathetic, and that she should move past it, like she did, and evolve. In order to turn the tables on Nora, Erica threw a couple stones right back at her, exposing Nora's glass house, including one stone in the form of the same question that Nora asked Erica. What were the last words your children said to you, to the best of your recollection? Nora immediately cracked. The second and most obvious stone Erica threw was an actual stone right through Nora's window. Erica resented Nora for scoffing at the notion that her wish took Evie away from her. So Erica flipped the script on Nora, which helped prove to Erica that Nora has the same weaknesses as her. Of course, Erica doesn't know the extent of Nora's hypocrisy, since Nora has her own supernatural idea in mind, the idea that she's a lens, which explains why her entire family disappeared, as well as Evie, whom she had contact with for the first time on the day of her departure. Just a quick tangent. Before Nora hung up on Dr. Allison Herbert, who suggested that Nora was possessed by the demon Asriel, Dr. Herbert said she placed a call to the Vatican, likely to seek permission from the Pope for an exorcism. While I hope this never comes to pass, I like that the show continues to flesh out their world and show how others are dealing with their sudden departure, instead of just the characters we follow. Also, I'm sure Blake has already pointed this out by now, but the demon Asriel is known as the Angel of Death. The prostitute that Nora shot in episode 106, Guest, was named Angel. The song playing in the background, as we all know by now, was Slayer's Angel of Death. Thus, there may be more to this demonic possession idea. However, I really hope the show doesn't go there. Shifting gears, several of my long-running theories have come true this week, including the most notable one. Virgil was the man who John attempted to kill via gunshot, no less. However, he might be Erica's father, not John's, since we learn that Virgil's very much into birds, just like Erica and Erica's grandmother. Regardless of whose relative it is, the outcome was the same, as John had to carry out his own brand of justice, which he still does, despite going to prison for this type of behavior. Whatever Virgil did explains the contempt John has for gifted people like Virgil and the town as a whole, which Matt pointed out. Last week's theory is shaping up as well, as we're already seeing Matt become a leader to the encampment folk. He quickly got out of the repent pillory by simply rejecting that someone take his place. Suffering breeds compassion, explained Matt. Matt also stated that they just needed a little guidance, and now he's their de facto leader. As I mentioned last week, I think Matt will lead an uprising over the bridge to Miracle like he saw the runners do in episode 205. This time it'll be with a flock of people ready to reclaim Miracle from John and company. My theory from episode 203 that had Tommy transitioning over to the Guilty Remnant could be happening already as Lori called Nora to see if she knew where Tommy was. Meg got to Tommy once and made quite the impression. Her potential pregnancy may be the straw that broke the camel's back, which I'm sure we'll learn about in their next POV episode. Again, it's such irony that Lori is now the one who's left alone, without a family or a cult. Considering that Lori asked Nora to apologize to Tommy if she ended up seeing him, could that imply that Tommy's Holy Wayne act blew up in both their faces already? Or is it more repercussions related to Lori and her actions, such as using Tom as a GR spy, running over defenseless people, turning her back on the GR, writing a tell-all book, and trying to rehabilitate existing members? I have another couple theories that I'm kicking the tires on from this episode. And let me quickly remind everyone, I do not read any blogs or listen to any podcasts until I've developed my own thoughts and interpretations first. That way you get my unadulterated take on things without the media's echo chamber having any influence. For me, it's more fun to compare and contrast after establishing my own takes first. I encourage you all to do the same, as it's not about predicting the right outcomes, it's more about asking the right questions. As far as new theories go, when it comes to Erica's hearing, I had a theory in mind based on something my mom once told me. Bear with me here, folks. She told me a story once how she nearly drowned as a child and that her eardrums were severely damaged, if not ruptured, in the process. This caused slight hearing loss for most of her life. Since the water in Miracle is such a powerful symbol to the people in the town and around it, what if Erica nearly drowned in this water, costing her her hearing in this process? What if Virgil was somehow involved in this in order to test the town's gifts, much like the Bird Box wishing well? Perhaps he tried to drown her in order to revitalize her hearing. I realize this is a major reach, but for Virgil to be denied forgiveness by his own family, he must have done something to harm one of the Murphys. So I'm looking at any physical symptom that he could have caused or made worse. After all, his handicap, which forced him to walk with a cane, is what clued me into the idea that he's the victim of John's attempted murder. My second theory this episode, which might actually hold some water, is that of Lily being the lens. Kevin said he didn't start seeing Patty until Lily and Nora moved in. To clarify, Kevin first had visions of Patty at his dad's mental hospital in the season one finale. But that was in a dream as he was driving back to Mapleton with Matt upon burying her dead body. On yet another side note, I think that the dream in the mental hospital was the creative impetus as to how they could bring back Ann Dowd for season two. Thoreau and Dowd always had such great scenes together, and the idea of Patty haunting him like she did in that dream was just too good to leave out in season two. So what if Lily is the lens? Evie had contact with her after all. Jill, Evie, and Michael were playing with Lily on the grass at the barbecue as Evie bluntly questioned Jill about Lily's father. That doesn't explain Nora's family's disappearance, but they could have been part of the worldwide sudden departure that took 2% of the population. Nora clearly didn't cause all of that herself. Then again, if Nora is the lens, that could explain Kevin's visions as well. However, to add weight to Lily being the lens, what if Lily caused Christine's departure? We just assume she bailed on Tommy and Lily at the rest stop, but it's possible she departed if Lily is in fact causing Kevin to lose his mind and people such as Evie to disappear around her. But why would Evie depart and not Michael, who was also in the vicinity of Lily that day at the barbecue? Well, in season one, we met Charlie Patterson, a character who had Down syndrome, who had also departed. Down syndrome brings with it a number of health problems, including a great risk of epilepsy. That explains why the questionnaire asks about any neurological or genetic disorders, including seizures. So there are some commonalities between Evie and past departures who also had neurological or genetic disorders. I still think Evie staged her disappearance. The point of this show is to explain life post-departure and how people move on with their lives despite such a massive trauma. Some people join cults, some people go crazy, some pretend nothing happened while others exploit or profit from it, be it a town like Miracle, the company, the loved ones, or departure insurance companies. Like Marklyn Baker from Perfect Strangers, I think Evie is using the departure to get out of a situation that her mom also wanted out of, as she believed that miracles shouldn't be closed off to those who were spared. Not by God, but by John Murphy. By the way, the choir sounds so much better with Evie, Taylor, and Violet. That's it for me this week, but follow me on Twitter at BDF331 and let me know your thoughts on this episode and season as a whole. The show is batting 1,000 right now and is, without a doubt, the best show on TV. You guys can catch me on the Film Schlubs podcast every week, as well as the Living Reminders blog. Thank you to Mary and Blake and to you, the audience, for listening.
Thank you, Brian. I really appreciate that. That was excellent stuff. And, you know, he brought up a bunch of cool stuff that I wanted to talk about real quick. brought up the idea of Virgil doing something to Erica, and perhaps that's the reason why she may be deaf, or there might be an issue why there's such a personal thing going on with that family, right? And then he brought up the idea about the departure and Evie faking it. I know we've already talked about this, but one thing I wanted to mention about this is when they were singing at the fundraiser, didn't you find that was a little inappropriate?
No.
Because they're talking about how everyone was spared and it's miracle and it's a fundraiser for a girl who potentially departed. Isn't that just, you know, like kind of like bad taste? Like bad form a little bit? I just want to throw that out there.
Maybe that's the only song they sing over and over and over and over and over and over.
That's it. That's all they got. But either way, really great stuff, Brian. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And for now, I think it's time for the Sudden Theory of the Week. Are you ready, my love?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. All right, I got a couple of sudden theories. Well, before I give mine, do you have any? You have any theories?
Well, I changed my theory about the dog.
Okay.
Because Kevin said that Patty had been with him since Lily.
That's correct.
And he came home with the dog when he found Lily.
That's right. And here's the other thing, too. Patty was in the kennel with Kevin.
Yeah.
When Kevin had to put the dog away.
Yeah.
So Patty was there. So the dog is not a real thing anymore. So that's it. That's all you got.
I'm telling you, this is part of why I have a 4.
Did you at least like the lens theory for Lily? Did you like that idea that Brian brought up?
Yeah.
Is that something you would go with? Are you going to like co-sign on that one?
With Lily being the lens?
Yes.
No.
No?
No. I think it's a cool idea. I'm not co-signing.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, I got 2 theories.
Okay.
You ready for this? First theory is that Meg captured Tommy.
Aww.
Meg captured Tommy, but Tommy stuck around because he liked her, and he finds out that she's pregnant, and things are happening. God. And here's the thing, remember, Tommy was saying they make sense, they know something. He is attracted to the guilty remnant in certain ways, and now if this is a way for Meg. Because we've already discussed this. Meg tried to say F you to Lori. She tried to say, fuck you. I can do whatever the hell I want to you. And better yet, I can do it to your son, too.
I don't think Meg would get pregnant for that, though.
Oh, you never know. You never know. I mean...
Pregnancy is not easy. Oh, you think it is?
We had kids pretty easily.
No, I'm saying pregnancy.
Oh, pregnancy. Getting pregnant.
Not conceiving.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think she conceived. I think
no,
she's pregnant.
No, I'm saying I don't think she would want to go through pregnancy and birth just to stick it to Lori.
I don't know. Maybe she's that vindictive. I mean, if she is bigger, more vindictive than Patty, I feel like a pregnancy would be part of it.
No. Well, she's going to be very regretful by week 6.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Fair enough. The HCG levels. We already talked about that. The second theory that I have is... It's kind of piggyback on Brian's thing. Perhaps Virgil, Christmas lights guy, did do something to Erica. And perhaps John went to go shoot him, and I feel like John shot Virgil and it somehow hurt Erica at the same time. And that's why there's a problem.
Can you have a theory about Matt and Mary and what's going to happen at the ultrasound? Because that's going to be fun.
Oh, that's... I mean, my theory last week was that Mary was going to wake up. She's going to wake up by season's end. It's going to happen. You can bet the freaking bottom dollar.
Do you think they're
going
to find a heartbeat?
Yes. I do.
Ooh.
I think they're going to find a heartbeat. I think the kid's going to be there. I think everything's going to be normal. And by the season's end, Mary will wake up.
Wake up for good? Or just like a one time, hey, what's going on? Bye.
You know, one of the listeners, and I forget who you are, and I'm so sorry that I forgot, but they had this great idea in the last listener feedback episode, which if you haven't gotten a chance, please go listen to the listener feedback episodes. Great stuff from all of you guys. The listener came up with the idea that Mary would wake up, but you wouldn't see it. She would be off in the distance or as a blurry figure or whatever, and you would only hear her voice as it was focused on other characters. Perhaps it would be Nora or Kevin or Matt or whatever. I really, really, really like that idea. I like it a lot. And we talked about a lot of theories there, but those are my two theories. You get like a double take there, you know, double mint gum theories. Sure. Double the pleasure, double the fun. So that is that. That is my sudden theory.
Please hang up and try again.
My love, do you have any final thoughts for this episode? Any final thoughts of for the beginning of what you think of Lens?
Matt Jameson got tan.
Matt Jameson did get tan.
I like that.
And he's got no problem. And it's funny, you know, Brian brought this up too. Now that Matt is taking control, well, not taking control, but leading the people in the Miracle Town, like the Miracle Outskirts, the Outer Miracle. Really, really good stuff there, because now he's refusing to let people take his place, and they respect him for it. I really, really do believe that he is going to lead these people into this town, or something is going to come of these people getting into town. I'm really behind that idea. Are you ready to close out the show?
Yes, I am.
All right, let's do it.
We want to hear from you, so please find us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Our handles are all the same. It's Living Reminders.
Remember, we have a listener feedback episode dedicated to just you guys. So if the social media isn't enough for you and you need to get more information out to us, you can always find us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to our website, thelivingreminders.com, to see all previous episodes and interviews.
And while you're on the website, you can get this little button on the top right-hand corner that says support. And in that support button, you'll find a bunch of different ways where you can support the Living Reminders, us, the podcast. One of them is Patreon. If you want to donate a dollar or two or whatever on a monthly basis, you can do that. Or if you want to do just one lump sum payment on PayPal, you can do that too. But the money aside, whatever, it's nice, but what we really care about is if you tell a friend. If you tell a friend that we exist, that the show exists, it's a good way for us, the podcast, to get recognition, but most importantly, the show, The Leftovers, to get the recognition that it deserves. If we supply good enough value for you, we want you to tell people that we exist.
Another great way that you can tell friends that you don't even know exist yet, friends, is to go to iTunes or Stitcher and to leave us a rating and review. I have given you the charge to get us up to 70 reviews at the end of November. We are currently up to 67, and Blake said,
whoa,
we're going to be giving away a special present to our 70th review. So please take the time to head on over to iTunes or Stitcher, leave a rating or a review. Reviews are when you actually write it out, and those are even, they're like worth so much more even to us, because then we get to read them. So I wanted to read you one. It's from longtime PlayTube user. Just as I've listened to all the podcasts of the Living Reminders, and I have to say that it is really an incredible podcast. The hosts know their stuff. They express their thoughts in a very cohesive and understandable way. And if you want to think and talk about the show when it's over, this is one stop you want to make. So thank you so much. for anyone who's left us a rating, review, and iTunes.
Yes, thank you so much, guys. And last but not least, check out the blog that we've already mentioned at theliverminders.com. Just hit the little button that says blog, and you'll see all the great stuff that's there. Well, my love.
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.